Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm your host, Ann Wyatt. I am super stoked to have Luis Narvez on the show today. Luis is with Siemens. This is a milestone episode for a milestone season. As you all are aware, this is season 7 of Workforce 4.0, and I could not think of a better guest to join us today than Luis with Siemens, but we will save that for now. Luis, do you want to introduce yourself more formally for everybody out there in the Internet of Things?
Well, for those of you who I haven't had the pleasure to meet in person or virtually, I'm Luis Narvaez, Product Marketing Manager for Somatic PLCs here in the US, the United States.
That's amazing. Because I just really remember when I was working at the workforce development office there in Kentucky 10 years ago, and we had all of these foundries and all of these metalworking plants come to that area, and they were greenfield sites, and it was an amazing investment opportunity for the local area workforce. But you know, the biggest problem that we ran into from a workforce development standpoint was getting the training for the S7 PLCs.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was kind of new to the area. It's a lot of automotive and a lot of GM.
Yep.
So, you know, the Corvettes made there. And so it was a Rockwell city until all these metalworking plants and some roll forming plants and all that came to town. And that was a lot of fun trying to network with training providers 10 years ago and bringing that awareness. So that is a big deal for me to have you on the show and continue that awareness that there are plants and it's a big necessity to have different PLC training providers in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the Siemens S7 side of things, it's definitely grown a lot more in the United States, especially North America in general, the presence. Globally, I mean, there's tons of opportunity and resources and use of Siemens automation components. You know, I think from a global perspective, every third machine on and every factory has a Siemens PLC in it. So, you know, that's a huge market share. That's a huge opportunity there. And, you know, being able to bring that to the United States has been a fun journey and continues to be a fun journey here to, as I like to say, show people the light.
Yes, I love that. Show people the light. Excellent. I love that. And, you know, it's a very critical skill set as well. So thank you for sharing that with us. I've got to welcome you in true Workforce 4.0 fashion. And I've got to know, if we were at one of these trade shows, which I think we originally established that we met at Automate a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. If we were at, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Automate. But if we were at one of these shows and we by chance maybe had a karaoke night, which seems to be pretty popular, what are you singing?
Okay. So I don't do karaoke normally. But if I were to partake in such festivities at a trade show event, I would probably end up doing Thunderstruck from AC/DC. And the reason why is my daughters, over the last summer, were like obsessed with like AC/DC and just like all those like classic rock bands and stuff like that. I don't know where they got it. There was I think they do it from that show Masked Singer. There was Yeah, there was somebody on there. I don't remember who it was or what were they. Anyways, someone on there who was, you know, lead singer for one of those bands. And of course, you know, when they get unmasked, if you've ever seen, never seen the show, unmasked, they sing a song from wherever they're from, you know, or they sing the last song that they sang, you know, when they got eliminated or whatever like that. And it was one of those songs, and my daughters love that show. So it just got stuck in their head and they wouldn't stop singing it. They would always request on the ride to wherever, the gym or their school, can you play Thunderstruck? Can you play Twisted Sister? Whatever, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Can I get up there and sing Thunderstruck with you?
Sure. There's a really cool karaoke place, actually. I live in Central Florida, and there's a really cool place. I forgot the name of it. Rising Star, that's what it's called.
Oh, that sounds like us.
Yeah.
That sounds like my venue right there.
It's a karaoke bar, but they actually have a live band and backup singers. So, like, as you're up there singing your thing, and it's like a stage, like a concert hall and everything. So, you know, it's a really good time. And obviously, if whoever's doing the karaoke is not performing well, they'll just like turn your mic down. The background singers will start to fill in, and, you know, the band's still playing, you know, very on key and everything. So, you know, it's still a good time for everybody involved either way.
That sounds like a good place, a good venue to crash for a podcast.
Yeah, you do a special episode.
I would die. Yeah. I would be like, oh my God, this is it. It'd Mecca.
It'd be too distracting.
It would have to be during their daytime hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think they're open during the day too, actually.
Are they?
I think so. I think it's like a all day and evening kind of thing.
No chance just sliding in there from about 1 to 3. Just,
I don't know, maybe.
Like, all day. Wow.
Maybe. I don't know. I have to talk to the owner.
That'd be fun.
I'll get back to you.
That'd be a lot of fun. Thank you. That's awesome. Well, I love that song choice. That's got to be a thing in 2025. Like, more big, like, hair metal bands.
I'm surprised I even remember the name Thunderstruck. I would have normally probably said Thunder.
Well, I think it's an appropriate karaoke song and title for a great connection, if you will, to how your company and yourself maybe contribute to the industry a little bit through electricity and PLCs. So I think it's a good move.
Maybe, yeah.
Marketing genius right there.
I'll make note of that. As a future campaign idea.
Yes. the people want to see that, but yeah. So, but when you think about the technology out there in manufacturing and you think about PLCs, which I'm not sure, I know we were kind of talking a little bit more about that earlier as well, is I don't think people are really, you know, average person walking around. Maybe they don't think about the use cases for PLC technology. It's kind of hidden in plain sight a lot of times. I think we were talking about your experience with Universal and amusement park rides and things like that.
Yeah.
But the technology has come a ways, I would think, in the last decade or so.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and PLCs are... PLC meaning, you know, programmable logic controllers, I guess, for those maybe listeners who don't know what a PLC is basically the core of any kind of like automated mainly industrial automated equipment. It's what's doing all the decision making and control of different functions of the machine, of the equipment itself. But the role it plays in our lives as consumers, as just normal people walking this earth, is a lot more than what we realize. You know, it's definitely the invention of the PLC has definitely revolutionized the way manufacturing is done and has accelerated the evolution of technology throughout the last 5-6 decades or so. There's a movie out there. It's a really popular movie. Anyways, it was based on the 60s NASA during the 60s and how they had all these mathematicians. It was like women in
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. So
there's I love that movie. And you know, I'm in Huntsville. You know, I'm in Huntsville.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. So Hidden Figures, right? They show up with this, you know, back in the day, right? NASA would do all their math with mathematicians. They'd have rooms full of mathematicians.
Of people.
Doing calculations. And their job was calculators. That was their job title, right? And they didn't have calculators as we know it today with, you know, electronics and everything built in. And then in that movie, they talk about, you know, the IBM coming in and replacing their jobs because they can compute 60 times faster, however, you know, whatever exponential number it is than any of the calculators on that floor. But these computers were like the size of an entire room, almost a whole house or something, you know? And so they obviously face challenges there or whatever. And so that's an example of now, I mean, look, we can carry a calculator in our pocket, right? Our phones can do all kinds of stuff. And it's not like that anymore. So just thinking about how our everyday technology has changed on the manufacturing side, the technology that makes the technology has also evolved in a similar fashion where they've gotten faster, they've gotten smaller. Somatic in general, the Siemens, let's say PLC brand, Somatic, has been around for over 65 years. The S7 series of Somatic PLCs has been around for over 30 years. Continues to evolve. And, you know, a lot of the evolution of our PLCs, of our controllers over that time period has really come as a result of the increasing demand from our customers, you know, to have control systems faster, smaller, safer, more resilient, more sustainable or energy efficient. And taking all that into consideration, you kind of have to evolve with the times, you know, or else you're not going to remain competitive.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, thinking about the transition of the workforce and with technology, and even probably through your own product line over the years, it's become easier for people to adapt, right? And to be trained on and to leverage and utilize and all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think the key thing is that anything we put into any of our products, and this goes for any vendor, by the way, this isn't, I would imagine any vendor, but I guess I can only speak on behalf of Siemens side of things. But when we put any kind of feature into our products, it's with the user in mind, right? It's not with the mindset of I'm trying to sell more of this widget or more of this function. There has to be a need for it. There has to be, it has to solve a problem. It has to be a problem to solve. And then, you know, this is the solution for that problem. And so when it comes to adopting this new technology, there's also, as you mentioned, the challenge of how do people learn about it? How do they now know how to service it, how to program it, how to maintain it, commission it, those kinds of things. And that's all considered as well when any kind of new products or existing products are developed over their life cycle. I think that's interesting to think about when you also look at the lifetime of industrial products versus, let's say, consumer products.
Yeah.
A PLC, for example, you know, it's not uncommon to go into a factory floor and see a PLC that was installed 30 years ago.
Yep.
And still running.
But I bet you don't still have your bag phone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, I mean, people almost laugh at others for having an iPhone that's 3 years old or whatever, or 4 years old. You got the iPhone. I don't even know what they're at right now. You got the iPhone 10. Oh my gosh, you're so far behind. You got to get the whatever it is, 15 now. 14
huh?
plus, you know.
Yep. Max, Pro Max.
Yeah, whatever. Pro Max plus, you know, advanced. So it doesn't evolve as quickly as consumer technology does. But I think that's also because, like you said, I mean, the workforce doesn't evolve as quickly, so to speak. The training that gets involved, the investments that gets involved in people and everything like that sometimes can overpower the investments in the technology itself.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what I do think is an underrated skill set that we should probably start considering when we're doing recruitment in this industry is looking for, and you know, I say this, but aptitude and attitude, but also like we need to go ahead and start integrating this conversation of reskilling as a career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you're going to do because technology is advancing so quickly anyway, right? That, you know, we've almost got to start having this conversation of changing that mindset of, okay, well, we're going to train you during your onboarding process, but expect continued.
Yeah.
Training.
I think,
yeah,
I think that is a lesson that a lot of employers don't recognize the value of is the continued learning mm-hmm. and development. Also, not just organization, not just companies, but also workers themselves is the value of continued learning and education because, you know, there may be a day where the technology has surpassed your base knowledge and that gap to fill that needed skill set to support that technology is going to take a long time to fill.
To overcome.
Yeah. And so, you know, as what the company's going to look at is, can I get somebody else who already has that skill set or do I upskill my current workforce? And like I said, I think that's something people have to consider individually, but also I think organizations owe it to themselves, again, to remain competitive and remain attractive also for workers is the continued investment in their own people and their own employees to gain the knowledge and skills they need to support newer technologies and newer concepts.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, right? And I mean, maybe we can do that some of the way with some things, right? And mm-hmm. and just kind of like look the other way. But I mean, the shortage of tool and die makers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is an example for me that comes to mind immediately because that process is older. And a lot of that workforce that would have any of that tribal knowledge is gone.
Some of it's an art form too, right? Some of it can't be taught. Some of those skills can't be taught. It's a feeling. It's a experience. You know, I've met machinists too that, you know, I've worked manual lathes and manual mills, vertical mills and things like that, bed mills. And, you know, they can go on a CNC machine and program G code and, you know, people can learn that skill, but to know things like tool wear and cutting depth and speeds and feed rates and all those kinds of things kind of sometimes takes a little bit of just experience. And how do you transfer that knowledge that, again, non-tribal knowledge that can't be taught? That's another challenge that companies are facing and workers are too.
Absolutely. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, the skills gap is really going away anytime soon, but I do think that we're making a lot of advancement in enabling the frontline workforce. Mm-hmm. And I know that a big part of that is the work that you all are doing at Siemens. And you've even got a new product out there. Now, of course, it's January by the time, you know, just recording hits. So I don't know if you want to share anything about that and how it's enabling your frontline workforce or your people in your workforce.
Yeah, I mean, so we are. It was announced earlier in Hanover Messe in around April, I think it was, or May of 2024. We did this big announcement that we're releasing our next generation Somatic S7-1200 PLC. We call it the S7-1200 G2. G2 for generation two. Second That's generation. Awesome. Very, very intuitive naming. And, you know, the 1200, let's say G1, has been around for about 15 years now. So in a PLC world, that's a typical life cycle, right? I mentioned earlier how it's not uncommon to see something installed 30 years ago, right? With that being said, you know, Siemens, we're still supporting the G1. G2 is coming out at the end of January 2025, so very, very soon. We're really excited about it. And before I talk about, I guess, some of the details or features that kind of help address kind of the workforce, I want to kind of talk about some of the challenges first that the workforce has and why.
Yes, I love this so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, we know that, like you mentioned, that skills gap is not going anywhere. What's the impact that manufacturers are having from these skills gaps? And there's lots of surveys out there. There was one, I think it was from Deloitte. It was a while back. It was like 2017 or 2018 they did this survey. But they estimated somewhere around like 2.5 million jobs by 2030 will go unfilled in the United States.
Yeah, that was the Deloitte survey.
Yeah, something like that, which is, I mean, I think it was by 2028 that many jobs would go unfilled.
That's
a huge amount, right? And I think that was just the manufacturing sector. That wasn't even just total jobs.
That wasn't everybody, no.
So, you know, that could result in lost productivity for a lot of manufacturers. Trillions of dollars in lost productivity of potential. Because now you're having workers work twice as hard to try to fill in gaps that they just need help. You need more people for. There's another survey that was done that determined that, and I guess we hear it all the time. I'm sure you hear it quite a bit, that robots are taking our jobs.
That was working in workforce development in 2012 when we were talking about the skills gap and everybody was just kind of stare. I mean, we just gotten out of recession, right? So, I mean, we were like bringing this up and everybody was just like, not now, you know? I mean, it was very much the energy of not now. And there was like very little urgency around it. And I think at that time, everybody was kind of like, oh, well, we've, you know, need to reskill, robots are going to take our jobs. And that has been a narrative, but I think we're finally realizing that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's, I mean, are there enough robots to take the unfilled jobs? Realistically. Yeah.
I think the real challenge is the biggest issue isn't that robots are taking our jobs. I think there's not enough humans to fill those jobs.
I don't think there's enough humans, period.
Yeah. And by the way, that's not a green light to start like procreating all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yes. But demographically speaking,
yeah,
you know,
I think the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, the retaining talent is going to be, should be one of the top or a top priority for a lot of companies, right? Because again, there's not enough people to fill the needs for the demands that are coming from their consumers, from customers and things like that, from users, to be more productive. Like I said earlier, productive, safer, faster, more reliable, things like that. And a big part of kind of retaining that talent is employee satisfaction, right? Happier employers means they're more willing to stay and innovate for you and innovate for the future of all of us, right? So what we see when we talk to a lot of these companies, these manufacturing companies, and you talk to some of the workers out there, is that a large majority of them spend their time doing work that can be automated, and by adapting technology such as robotics, right? They're doing mundane tasks that are repetitive, not very rewarding, and most of them would rather spend their time doing more productive things that actually add value or add value to the business or add value to just their quality of life. Exactly. So making automation easier, making automation solutions faster, safer is also kind of one of the big topics that we wanted to tackle with the S7-1200G2, is how do we make the engineering of these systems easier? How do we make them faster so that way, you know, manufacturers can be more productive, and obviously so workers can get a little bit more better satisfaction out of that. And then on top of that, I mentioned safety is a concern, right? And we all, what's the three D's in manufacturing? Dirty, dangerous, dingy?
Dark and dull.
Dark and dull or whatever they say or whatever.
Yeah.
And you go into some of these factories and they're pretty clean. They're not like dirty. They're not dark and dull. Some of them are, you know, but for the most part, you know, you go into some of these automotive factories and they're really clean, very well lit, and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But they are dangerous. At the end of the day, it's moving equipment. There's pinch points. There's points where you can lose limbs or even worse, life. And so safety is a very critical factor that manufacturers have to consider. And it used to be that safety, to buy a system that was designed safe, and I, you know, air quotes around the word safe, were expensive. They were expensive. They were complicated to do, especially if you're using like earlier, you know, safety PLCs, safety controllers, and safety devices and things like that. And so, so another thought about this was, how can we address the safety concerns for a lot of manufacturers and a lot of machine builders and things like that? And, you know, there's this common theme among a lot of machine builders where in order to have advanced functions, you have to pay a lot of money for them. And what we thought was, why can't you have advanced functions and still have a cost-optimized solution so you can be competitive and so your customers can have the safest possible design that they need, right?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of one of the key things, right? So I mentioned we want to make a product that was easier to configure, easier to adapt, make something obviously faster, more productive, which, you know, is the goal. Obviously, if you're going to create a new product, it needs to be better, faster overall, and safer. And so going back to the first part of your question of, or I guess technically, I guess the second part of your question of like, how does the 1200 Gen 2 address some of these workforce challenges that we are talking about now and talking about all the time and you talk about on your podcast, is, you know, the 1200 Gen 2, what I really like about it is the scalability story. It's considered used in more what we call smart applications that are more cost, have more higher cost pressures. So standalone machines, standalone industrial equipment. And if you need to go into, if you are an end user or you are a machine builder and you need to design a system that has way more advanced requirements or higher requirements, maybe higher performance or larger application or larger install, you can scale into the more advanced controller, which is, I call it the big brother of the S7-1200, the S7-1500 PLC. And that's done by using the same engineering tools, the same engineering platform.
That's
all
nice.
The same instruction sets, all those things. So from a skills gap, you don't have to learn anything new to support this new product. You can continue off of the knowledge that you already have. And if you don't have any knowledge on this, we have tools that can help bridge that gap. We have free online workshops that you can take, to self-guided and instructor-led workshops that users can take to learn our platform and learn our PLCs and learn how to program them in the TIA portal. We have online tool called WinCC Unified Academy, which they can use to learn about developing visualization and HMI and SCADA screens in our WinCC platform. TIA University for TIA portal to program our S7 controllers and things like that. So we have the tools to set the foundation, right? From the performance standpoint, it's more than double the performance of the current generation, the 1200 G1, which, by the way, is a very popular controller. It's cost optimized. And so a lot of universities, a lot of students learn on the S7-1200 today.
Yep.
I anticipate that that's going to continue to be a trend in the future with the Gen 2, with the 1200 G2, because again, it still maintains that cost, that low cost of entry. It still maintains that familiarity of using the TIA portal. So the same tool set, same engineering tools and instruction set as the 1200 Gen 1 and the S7-1500. And from the employee satisfaction perspective of making things easier, we introduced a lot of other advanced features without introducing higher costs that make it easier for them to engineer some of these advanced solutions. And then lastly, from the safety side, a lot more compact solutions to realize smaller safety applications. Mm. With the 1200 Gen 1, we have safety. We have a safety PLC that can get you up to SIL 3 performance level E, which is like the highest level of safety integrity that you can design a system.
Oh, actually, that's fantastic.
SIL 4, but there's very, very little applications that achieve that. But yeah, that's the highest rating any PLC can get for safety integrity as part of a system. And we had the safety IOs that were, you know, again, overall as a system was pretty cost effective. So it made it very easy to design a integrated safety, a machine with safety integrated at a low cost. The challenge that we faced with the 1200 Gen 1 were the applications where the safety wasn't as complex, where maybe they had, it was a small machine, so they had one emergency stop button, and that emergency stop button would trigger, you know, a shut off power to some of the drives or the motors or things like that. And you would do like a coast stop or something like that. So very simple safety applications. A lot of times customers would just go with like a safety relay and still kind of meet those minimum demands. The challenge there though with that is that, again, what happens if your customer requests more safety options?
Yeah.
You have that flexibility to adapt those requirements into that machine. And oftentimes the answer is yes, but it's going to be, you know, however many times more expensive to do it that way. Or no, we don't really have a lot of flexibility because this machine is designed and set in this way. You know, it would introduce a lot of costs and price increase to modify that and adapt any additional safety functions or whatever the case is, right? So not a lot of flexibility when it came to safety. With the 1200 G2, we now have lower density safety IO modules that no longer take space on the DIN rail. So you don't have to worry about space inside the enclosure and add additional components for safety.
I gotcha.
And from a cost perspective, are a lot more cost effective than the predecessor, the 1200 Gen 1 safety solution, in that, you know, because there are lower density modules, you can realize those more simple applications without having to add something as inflexible as a safety relay or something like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a lot more intuitively like safe. It seems like, you know, when in the design of it, you know, the product, it seems like it was designed to be a little bit more intuitive with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also flexible with your options,
yep.
Your variables.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some other, you know, smaller features that I think, go a long way. We showcased the S7 1200 Gen 2 at Automate earlier this year. We showcased it at the PAC Expo and SPS in Germany as well, and Hannover Messe. And there were some handling features, and what I called handling features are more like physical handling features that make other people's jobs much easier and take their jobs into consideration. Like, you know, do many people think about the panel builder, the people that's wiring these control panels or assembling these automation systems? Or are we only thinking about the programmer? Are we only thinking about, you know, the maintenance guy that has to troubleshoot this?
Right.
So we took into consideration all different roles within the life cycle of any type of industrial equipment into consideration. Even like I said, on the service and maintenance side, that's another topic I wanted to bring up is look at our upcoming workforce. They're used to using technology like iPhones and smartphones that have some features that haven't really been introduced into industrial products yet.
100%. Yeah.
So, you know, things like, what if I've got a fault on my machine? I've got a system fault, maybe a wire is broken or loose or something. And I want to be able to get my diagnostics from my phone. I have this phone in my pocket. Why do I need to go back to my desk, grab my laptop, plug in just to get alarm messages and things like that?
Yeah, because like, what if you're all the way across the plane? I mean,
I don't have my laptop on me, you know?
Yeah.
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 Or in the middle of the night and the maintenance guy is not there, but the operator's, you know, close by or something like that. So with the S7-1200 Gen 2, we added an NFC chip in there. So NFC stands for near field communication. It's wireless radio technology. It's the same technology that's in our credit cards. You know, when you go to tap to pay?
Yeah.
That's NFC.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a RFI. It's a radio chip. So we put one of those in our controller, and we have this app that's coming out called the NFC app. Somatic NFC app, really, really simple. It'll be free. And what that does is get you those diagnostics and allow you to service the machine from your smartphone.
I gotcha. What?
On my laptop, I don't need any specialized tools or software or anything like that. I already have the smartphone in my pocket. Why not just get these diagnostics in my hand in plain text, in English or whatever language I prefer, and be able to troubleshoot the system right away. So again, if I'm an operator, it's 2 a.m, I can send a screenshot of these diagnostics to my maintenance guy, who's probably at home or working another job or another site across the country. And he can tell us, you know, okay, this is what you need to do, or this is how you can service this equipment much faster, or send it to the machine builder. And then they can either schedule a tech or give you specific instructions on how to address those faults. Those are features that, you know, sound intuitive, but those are things that haven't been implemented in technology in the last few decades. And the 1200 Gen 2 is introducing a lot of those intuitive, useful features. And I think a lot of people, again, a lot of the upcoming workforce are used to stuff like that. So they'll really appreciate the use of common technology and common sense tools to make their jobs easier.
This is really fascinating to me. I love this, first of all, but I'm really fascinated by this because this type of technology, this isn't connective technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like you're saying, like radio.
Mm-hmm.
So then it doesn't, like, you don't necessarily have to, you know, access like wireless or.
Right. You don't need Wi-Fi. You don't need a cellular connection for it. And it's near field. Right. So.
Right.
In that sense, it's not so insecure because you need to be very close to the device in order to actually
exactly
the information. A lot of people, they shy away a little bit from the idea of like wireless built in. That's not secure. Right.
Well, I mean, that's the very first thing your IT person is going to come back and say.
Cybersecurity is a big topic as well. You know, we didn't talk about that, but, you know, that's another topic that Siemens is also addressing at the forefront of innovation in their products, too, is the cybersecurity side. But again, kind of thinking about how NFC works is I've got to be up, like physically in my cabinet touching the device in order to get those diagnostics, right? So from a cybersecurity perspective, if I'm that close to a controller, if I'm inside the cabinet, I don't need NFC to cause a cyber incident, right? I can cause a lot more damage at that point. And so there's other security measures that are going to be much more effective at mitigating a cyber risk than disabling the NFC on the controller, which you can do, by the way. It is, if it's really that concerning, you can disable that. But it is a nice tool to have for, again, the maintenance, the troubleshooting side of things, spending less time on mundane tasks and focusing on more productive tasks.
This is so clever. Like, I just love this. Wow. This was good. Hey, this is really clever, really. Because that is, you know, that's a really big hot topic right now, cybersecurity. And if we put everything on the internet, what's going to happen? And IP and, you know, being hacked and all. I mean, that's like a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that, it is. It really is. And again, it's just one of those features that the intention is really, again, to focus on improving the lives of the people that are in the manufacturing floor, that are on the manufacturing floor, servicing the equipment, making sure that all of our everyday consumer products are made, you know, to a standard that we all love.
I love that. That's got to be a huge win for you professionally. But I'd love to know a little bit more about your career journey and your career path. And maybe for those listening out there that are thinking about getting into this type of occupation or have an interest in learning more about this field, for you personally, what is your experience with this industry? And what are some of your biggest wins along the way?
Yeah. So I've been with Siemens for over 10 years now, and I went to school. I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. And to be quite honest, I feel extremely lucky, blessed, and grateful for where I am right now in my career, being, you know, PLC product marketing manager. It's one of my passions that I've had before I even worked for Siemens. And I think my love for just electronics and technology started at a really early age. I remember my family, my dad brought home an HP computer. It was a Packard Bell, actually. It was before it was Hewlett Packard.
Bell. Yeah.
And it was so cool to me to see this thing. And I like took it apart one day. And of course my parents were really mad at me, but you know, I put it back together and it still ran and all that stuff. But I really wanted to know what was behind all of that. I was curious. And I think that curiosity really sparked my interest in engineering and technology. And while I was in high school, they had this dual enrollment program where I could, you know, spend half my day at a trade school, get kind of started on that. And then the other half was my high school education.
That's cool.
And so I did that. And the trade I got into was electrician. I wanted to be an electrician.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was maybe getting shocked excited me. I don't know.
I think, well, in all fairness, I think like the electricity and the studying part of electricity is really cool. Not to throw this back to Thunderstruck here, but I mean, it's cool to learn about AC and like learn how it works.
And so, yeah, so I did that. And then one of the, I don't know, part of the electrician, like, coursework, there was a section where we learned about controls, automation, and PLCs a little bit. And that kind of like flipped the switch for me. I was like, oh, what if I could program this? What if I can go into a career where I'm designing PLCs? Like, that would be really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Right? So I don't know why I didn't think of computer or electronics engineering or something like that. I went into electrical engineering probably because it was a healthy balance of everything, you know, that I was passionate about at the time. And while I was in school, I struggled a little bit not because of the coursework was difficult for me. It was more or less just everything else that goes on with being a young adult, not just like trying to have fun with friends, but also just balancing work. You know, I didn't have all of my education paid for, or I didn't have a full scholarship that helped, you know, pay for my education. And I was going to a university and things like that. So, you know, I had to augment some of that with paying for my education and working and things like that. So it was just a hard balance, you know, from a time perspective of all that stuff. Meanwhile, working in sleep in those schedules. And so I realized kind of midway through my educational career that I really had to toughen up on my grades and do better. And that's where I kind of just like really sacrificed a lot of things to work hard and get really good grades and finish strong. But the damage was kind of done a little bit, and it was hard for me to find work in the careers that I wanted to get into and get internships and get co-ops and things like that I wanted to. And I got very fortunate that I was able to get an internship with, I live in Central Florida, just disclosure. And I was fortunate that I was able to get an internship at one of the local theme parks here.
That's and awesome.
I got to work on what I already, again, had some background knowledge on with PLCs. I got to work on PLCs. I got to work on automation technology. And it only like ignited even further my passion for industrial automation technology. Now, it's funny because in that industry, it's not a factory floor. It's not a manufacturing facility. So you don't really realize as a person who's riding the ride, the technology that goes behind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're just stoked to be there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, as a parent of a kiddo that I've dragged to Disney several times before he knew he was at Disney. Oh, my gosh.
It was so fun. It was one of the best experiences of my career working in an industry like that with the technology like that, right? And I did that for like 3 years or 2 years.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
We should like highlight that more, that's a part of that.
It's a growing industry. I mean, obviously, you know, people love riding rides. So there's always opportunity for those, you know, there's ride builders and all those things. But I guess, you know, so like I said, that kind of further ignited my passion for this technology. And then I was getting close to graduation and I was like, okay, I have the experience under my belt. I have the passion. I should be able to land a job in this career easy. And that was actually farther from the truth. I mean, I could have probably stayed in that entertainment industry, but I really wanted to branch out a little bit more and learn, you know, get different perspectives, right? I still wanted to stay in this industry, but I didn't want to stay stuck on entertainment at that time. So I applied for a lot of the big automation vendors, Siemens included, and went to all the career fairs, got pretty far in a lot of my interviews. And I think I only got one offer out of, I don't know, probably like 50 interviews my senior year. And I got one offer and I was starting to get a little bit discouraged at, like, you know, my chances of finding a career job, as hard as I had worked, you know, as much as I had pushed through and then the connections I made and things like that. And then I get a call randomly from somebody at Siemens, a recruiter, about their engineering leadership development program. And they had pulled my resume from, you know, an application I submitted online, and they had an opening. You know, somebody had left the program early, and so they needed to fill that opening quick. And so it was, you know, for starting the following summer, a few months after, like a month after I would have graduated. And I was stoked. I was like, this is it. I got this job in the bag. I worked so hard. I know this stuff. I have passion for it. And, you know, I crushed the interview. That was probably my first, let's say, big career win, is just getting the job, getting in the door at the company that I wanted to work for, Siemens. I was so happy to get that job. Then to be in a rotation program where I got to experience different industries. I worked in process industries, oil and gas industry as a process engineer. I worked in machine tool industry as an applications engineer, completely different, right? Obviously.
Yeah, like I love that you got all this exposure, I guess, yeah. Is what I'm mentally sitting here thinking. Like, that's crazy. Because, you know, if you were in manufacturing, it would be a lot harder to mm-hmm. rotate industries like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't let you do it.
That's the thing is I feel very fortunate and blessed to have the opportunity to work. And there's a lot of companies that do these kinds of programs where you rotate throughout the organization. You not only get to try different roles, but maybe you get to relocate and try those different roles in different places that maybe you've never lived before or experienced before. So I got to do that too and travel the world, you know, basically.
That's so cool.
In a short period of time. And I do appreciate that. And I ended up rolling off into a role as an applications engineer with our machine tool segment, and then did that for a couple years. Was getting married, wanted to move back home closer to family, and applied for a job as a business, as an automation consultant, and I got that job, but I wasn't the first pick. You know, and that kind of gave me a chip on my shoulder. That I, you know, wasn't the first pick in that role. I thought I was a good fit for that role, and I was. And then a couple years into that role, things changed in the business, and I ended up getting into a role that I'm in now, which is product management, product marketing and product management for our PLCs. And I've been in that role for, I don't know, 5 years now, maybe. Don't remember the exact year. COVID was a blur, so I lost track of time after that. But and I'm super excited because I get to be part of things like the design of products. Like I said, this was back in high school when I was like, what if I could design these things? You know, I get to be part of that process. I get to be part of the launch of a product. I get to be part of the promotion of this product. And the 1200 G2 is exciting to me because again, it's something that I think I feel like I had an impact on. This is almost, you know, a product that I feel a personal connection to. And I do feel passionate about it. I do think it's going to change the way that manufacturers approach certain challenges in industry.
I love that. I think your story is so impactful. And I think there are so many kids out there listening that are like this. I mean, they're probably thinking the same thing, or maybe they're soon to be grads and they're having kind of the same experiences, you know? So I think that's really
cool. I think what helped, I guess if there was like one piece of advice I could say is definitely network. Don't be afraid to ask questions, you know, to people who have done these things a lot, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was probably what helped me out is, again, that curiosity that I had to just want to understand how things worked or what people did and just all kinds of things. And as annoying as it gets sometimes, you know, I also think about the point I am in my career. Now, I get young, early career people who either have not started their career yet or still in education, still learning, or people who have just started with Siemens. Now asking me questions that I would have asked 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And 10 years seems so short compared to a lot of seasoned veterans, you know, OGs that but it's kind of come full circle. And I do love that. I love participating in like recruiting too. You know, I just did a university recruiting earlier this year.
For I love Siemens. That.
That was a really good experience and almost like a mentorship type position, you know, sharing my experiences and also both positive and negative.
I think that's the best. Like, I just love that you're that human, you know, I just love that because we need more of that in this industry.
Yeah.
Our lives depend on it.
Yeah. You know? I've had my share of rejection, as I mentioned. I think you and I talked before we, you know, started this podcast about, you know, experiences I've had in the past where it's just been very rude and very discouraging for somebody early in your career. You know, it's hard to build confidence. There's this joke. I remember when I was in school, it was like a meme at the time going around of like, I can't get a job because I have no experience because I can't get a job because I have no experience.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I've seen like that.
infinite loop kind of thing. And that still kind of holds true today. You know, it's very challenging to stand out in a crowd where everybody's in the same position as you. And sometimes it feels like your personality or your GPA or whatever you're going to get in your own head about spiraling is the only difference maker between you and somebody else, you know, getting a position.
And I love that, you know, you're passing that advice on kind of as you're passing the torch to the next generation. So, well, Lewis, I really appreciate this conversation today. For everyone that has maybe listened to this episode and they want to connect with you, because they should, by golly, you are an amazing human. What's the best point of contact for you?
I would say LinkedIn's probably a good place to reach out, to connect. I check LinkedIn regularly. So if you can't meet me in person, I also go to a lot of industry trade shows. So if you do happen to attend some of the major ones, especially Automate, you can always come by, say hi to me, and you can exchange contact info, whatever. So, but if you can't, LinkedIn's always the easiest way.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's Automate, and that is in Detroit this year, and that is in May, everybody.
So go on
and book your hotel rooms. We'll see you there. You know, everybody that's listened into the show today, we appreciate you. If you like this content and you like this podcast, you like what you're hearing, just leave us a review, let us know, and all of Lewis's information will be connected and linked to the show notes. We will see you guys next time on Workforce 4.0.
Thank you.